Mr. Patel, whenever you're ready, we'll hear from you.
Good morning, Your Honors. At issue in this case is whether Hobbs Act robbery is a career offender crime of violence. It is not under either the force clause or the enumerated offenses clause. First, Your Honor, Hobbs Act robbery is not a crime of violence under the force clause, which requires the use, attempted use, or threat use of physical force against a person. Threat of force or even actual force against property is not enough. But, Your Honor, one look at the Hobbs Act robbery statute here makes it very clear that the force or threat of force against a person requirement is not satisfied. Your Honor, here, for once, we don't have to muddle through the statute to try to figure out what Congress meant, because it's right here in the statute. Congress, in a big way, said that Hobbs Act robbery can be violated by threat of property, and not only that, future threat to property. In fact, in the statute, Congress says it three times. It says Hobbs Act robbery prohibits fear of injury, immediate or future, to the person or property of another, or the property in its custody, or the property of a family member or another. So under these broad terms, Your Honor, there's no ambiguity here. Hobbs Act robbery therefore categorically fails to qualify under the force clause. Now, Your Honor, turning to the enumerated offenses clause, we have to demonstrate here that Hobbs Act robbery is not a generic robbery.
Which enumerated offense clause you talking about?
We're talking about generic robbery, Your Honor.
In which guideline?
In 4B1.2A. So there's a four in the new guideline.
What version?
Pardon me?
Which version of the guideline?
The new guideline, which
the
applies. Yes.
And he was sentenced under the old guideline.
Well, Your Honor, at that time, when he was sentenced, the government was conceding that the residual clause
was... He was sentenced under the old guideline.
He was sentenced under the old guideline.
You're arguing with the new guideline.
Yes, Your Honor, because the circumstances were very different at that time, because at that time the government was conceding that the residual clause was void for
effect.
At the time of the sentence, the new guideline was in effect. But because there was a...
How long had it been in effect?
It had been in effect for 3 days, Your Honor.
And so he was sentenced under the old guideline.
He was sentenced under the old
guideline. Which guidelines was he supposed to be sentenced?
Well, Your Honor, see, at that time, there was a potential ex post facto problem, but it became clear that that's no longer the case after Beckel said the residual clause is not void for vagueness. So because there's no ex post facto issue now, the proper guideline should be the guideline that was in effect at the time of sentencing.
So he was sentenced under the old, on the wrong guideline.
Yes, Your Honor, he was.
That's what I'm trying to get you to say.
Yes, Your Honor.
And do you argue that in your brief?
Yes. I mean, we first argued that, you know, under the before Beckles came down, we filed our opening brief then. At that time, there was an ex post facto problem, and so we argued that he should be sentenced under the old guideline. But after Beckles, we said that he should be sentenced under the new guideline. The government argues that, too.
At the sentencing, that's right.
Yes.
All of you went up, you had the sentencing, and everybody agreed it was either explicitly or implicitly that it was the wrong guideline.
That you agreed
to have him sentenced on the wrong guideline, and then nobody complained about it, and now you're on appeal complained about it.
Yeah, because the circumstances have changed, Your Honor.
You didn't object. That's my point, you didn't object. So how are we supposed to review your claim that he was...
Well, Your Honor,
that his guidelines were miscalculated when you let him be sentenced on the wrong guideline.
Because, Your Honor...
We review it for harmless error or plain error.
No, Your Honor, I don't think you review it under either of those because the reason...
We're not reviewing it under one or the other.
The reason, I think it's de novo here, the reason why, we didn't ask for the government wasn't arguing that it qualified under... And it's the government's burden...
Wasn't representing.
Right, but it was the government's burden, Your Honor, show that it was a crime of violence. The only thing they argued was that the offense qualified under the force clause.
Both lawyers, in my view, to help the court get it right, to get it under the right guideline.
And Your Honor, at that time when the DOJ...
nobody complained. Nobody helped the court out, and the court sentenced him under the wrong guideline.
Because the circumstances are very different. The DOJ, the government, was conceding, Your Honor, that the only thing that mattered was the force clause. And so if the government was conceding that the only thing that mattered was the force clause, then we're not going to argue that we're not going to make an issue about the residual clause. The only thing at issue in the whole sentencing was, did it qualify under the force clause?
Now, the residual clause at the time he was sentenced was gone.
At the time he was sent.
It went 3 days before it was gone, right?
Yes, right. Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor.
It was no longer there at the time he was sentenced.
Right. So, Your Honor, addressing the generic robbery point, I mean, this court in Peterson, this court in Flores-Granados has held that the way to determine the generic definition is by looking at what most states...
And robbery has been added to the enumerated clause.
Yes, Your Honor, but...
As of August the 4th, and it was not there 3 days earlier.
Right. It was not there 3 days earlier.
Why don't you concede that if we agree with you, the analysis would have to be under plain error?
We would win under plain error, Your Honor, because it's clear here that that it doesn't qualify either under the force clause or the enumerated offenses clause. So I agree with you there, Your Honor. But because of the circumstances, the unique circumstances
did
where...
Did it qualify under any provision of the guidelines, the prior guidelines?
The prior guideline? Well, Your Honor, we had the residual clause, and likely it would have qualified under the residual clause because this court has said larceny from a person qualifies. It's a much broader clause because it involves a potential risk of injury. But that's not under the new guideline, definitely would not qualify because that's not the inquiry under the new guideline.
The residual clause is gone.
Yes, it's gone. And so all we have left are the enumerated offenses clause. And this is not generic burglary, robbery, Your Honor, because generic robbery requires, as all courts have held.
I assume you're right on that.
Yes.
But how do we get to that point in view of the fact that you didn't object to the wrong guideline being applied?
But Your Honor, we didn't object because
you're supposed to give the judge a chance to get it right. That's what the harmless error review process deals with.
But
the lawyers are supposed to help the judge out enough, at least to object and say, "Judge, you've got to get it right. The new guidelines apply. The law was changed 4 days ago.
Right.
And we need to apply that here."
But Your Honor, if we did object to that, we would have been doing our client a disservice because at that time, United States versus Pugh.
You might be doing him a disservice to come up here on plain error review when you got to satisfy Alano. I mean, maybe you satisfy plain error review, and all I'm asking you is which one applies, and
right.
You won't give me an answer to that.
Right, right.
And you don't argue it in your brief. You didn't argue it in your brief. You get back to it a little bit in the reply brief. You say the government's right.
Yeah, because at that time, I mean,
expect you to help us out, too.
Right,
so
right.
What standard of review are we dealing with? Yeah. Is it harmless error review, even though you didn't object? Or is it plain error review, because it wasn't preserved? And if it is plain error review, how do you satisfy the four prongs of Alano? And if you do satisfy them, how far have we got to go to satisfy them? All the way to number four?
Your Honor.
I don't know. I mean,
if we do apply plain error review here, Your Honor, we clearly meet that because this, again, like I said, is a very unique case in that when we look at the statute, the terms of the statute.
In the context that most of the time the lawyers object and the stuff's litigated in the district court before it comes
right,
up here.
Right.
This issue was not litigated and resolved in the district court before it came up here.
Your Honor, but...
The judge didn't consider whether the robbery, which is now
yeah.
in the enumerated right. offenses clause had anything to do with Hobbs Act robbery.
But, Your Honor...
He didn't look at that because you all had him looking at the guideline that was in effect 4 days earlier.
But the government agreed to that, too. And the government
agreed to it. Everybody agreed to it.
The government
and the judge agreed to it, too. And the probation officer agreed to it. Everybody was wrong.
Pardon me. Was it a mistake, or did you deliberately overlook it in order because it wouldn't help your client?
Well, Your Honor, at that time, under Pew, because, Beckles had not come out...
No, I'm asking you a question about during sentencing.
Yes.
Were you aware that there was a new guideline provision in and decided not to raise it?
Oh, no, Your Honor, yes, we were aware that there was
so
a new guideline.
So you think it's appropriate that you can let the court apply the wrong law if it helps your client?
No, but, Your Honor, that's the thing. There wasn't the wrong law at the time. Under Pew versus United States, if the guideline that was in effect at the time of the conduct...
You're arguing it under the new guideline.
Because Beckles has come out, Your Honor. Because that's changed.
That's not the one that Judge Watch dealt with.
But in any event...
He didn't sentence him under the new guideline. He sentenced him under the old guideline.
Right, but Your Honor, well... this court,
this is not rock.
This court, this is a very unique situation where the DOJ was conceding one thing; they weren't arguing generic robbery. So, at that point, we would have been ineffective if we argued at that time that the new guideline should apply because there were two hurdles there he had to get through at the time. Whereas, with the old guideline. There was the force clause and the enumerated offenses clause, whereas if the DOJ was conceding that the residual clause was void for vagueness, the only hurdle at that time would have been the force clause.
What troubles me is that lawyers before a judge, if they know the court's applying the wrong law, can't continue tolerating that if they know it's the wrong law.
But it wasn't...
And just because it helps your client to have the court make a mistake.
But, Your Honor, no, the thing is, it is under Pew versus United States. If one is being exposed to an ex post facto violation based on the guidelines that are in effect at this time of sentencing, then the court is supposed to apply the more favorable guideline at the time.
I don't understand your argument why you're making it so darn complicated. You had the new guidelines in effect at the time he was sentenced, and he was sentenced under the wrong one, a substantial right. Was affected under the plain error rule, and you were not going to be harmed. You were going to be helped because the Hobbs Act takes him out of the career offender. Isn't it that simple?
Well, Your Honor, this court should remand it then. So it's clear here that there's an error under the new guideline. And if that's the new guideline, that guideline should have been in effect, there's a plain error here, Your Honor.
So you're arguing plain error.
Your Honor, the plain error is definitely met here because we don't have – I can go through – there's clear error.
We have to recognize a plain error to remand. We have to jump through the Alano prongs, which is not an easy task.
Right.
That's
right.
The reason that they have these rules.
Right.
Lawyers are supposed to
– Your Honor, assuming that –
Because that's
right.
That's a rough road to hoe.
And if you assume that here we have a very unique statute,
maybe you got it. But nobody argued it till today, right? I mean, it's not in your brief. Nobody's brief, plain error. But it may satisfy it. I don't know because we haven't really studied it. We haven't been asked to. And that happens in some other cases too. But you had guidelines that had been changed, and he was sentenced under the old guidelines. And if that's error, that gets you past the first prong.
Mm-hmm. That's the first prong. Right.
To me, the appropriate course would have been for you or the U.S. attorney or both of you to tell the court that it is not applying the guidelines at the time of sentencing, which is the general principle. And then you have to face the Beckles issue. You have to face whether the court's make that argument at that point as to whether he's still that you can't apply the new guidelines at least mm-hmm. to that extent because of the ex post facto. That would be the argument. But it troubles me a lot that you were aware of the error by the district court and didn't bring it to the attention.
I think because, Your Honor, there was an assumption there that the guideline should apply that was in place at the time of the conduct. Otherwise, he was facing an ex post facto violation.
And so the answer is, I think, Judge Meemar asked you before, did y'all just make a mistake? And I think the answer is probably yes, that there was a mutual mistake by the lawyers, the probation officer, and the judge. And the question is how we fix it, or whether your client is entitled to have it fixed, and whether
generous,
we fix it.
That's a very generous assumption. You guys all make mistakes.
But, Your Honor, also, we're defense counsel. I mean, it's the government's burden here to prove that the offense qualifies.
I think it's the obligation for the lawyer standing up in the courtroom to help the judge get the law right. Maybe I'm wrong.
And before Beckles, that was right. I mean, before Beckles, our client was facing an ex post facto violation.
I know, but
with
you have
the
to
way
that
things stood
under the correct law. The correct law, right. Isn't it normally you apply the sentencing guidelines
at
the time of sentencing?
Yes, Your Honor, but unless
you're facing that, and the first question comes is, Judge, why are you applying an expired guidelines?
Right.
And then you have to face these hurdles that you argued before us and let the district court jump through the hoops. And when Beckles came down, it might have changed the whole scenery again. No question about it.
What was the date of Beckles?
Beckles, Your Honor, I don't... It came out after after we filed the opening brief.
It was after the brief?
Yes. After the opening brief in this court, in the Fourth Circuit.
You were talking about saying a remand in this case.
Yes.
What do you want remanded?
Your Honor, we can have a Oh, I'm sorry.
You think we should decide, if you're right, we should decide the Hobbs Act question here and then just simply send it back to the judge to re-sentence in light of our findings? Or do you want a complete remand?
Right. I mean, Your Honor, this is a legal issue that this court can decide. And it's going to be a recurring issue, and the parties have briefed it here, so this court can decide it. But if this court doesn't want to do that, then it could remand back down so the district court does get the first opportunity to make a finding on the new guidelines. But, you know, we would submit that's not necessary here because it's very clear that it doesn't qualify. What relief do we want? We would like for you to decide. I think you could decide here that Hobbs Act robbery is not a crime of violence under either the force clause or the enumerated offenses clause.
And we have to remand it for resentencing to decide that.
Sure, absolutely.
So you basically want us to decide the categorical issue of robbery.
Yes.
As opposed to having the district court do it in the first instance.
Yes, Your Honor, because I think that's something that you can do here.
That's the bottom line. That's
Yeah.
Okay. Why don't you come back on rebuttal and see
Okay,
if
great.
New.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, Mr. Hanlon. Were you the lawyer down below?
I was, Your Honor. And I was there at sentencing.
Was it a mutual mistake by everybody?
Your Honor, respectfully, and I guess I can't tell if this is favorable to my argument or not favorable to my argument.
No, these are officers of the court.
We're always required to be candid to the court, Your Honor. I tried to get it right. I'll certainly say that. At the time, I believed I was stuck in a position where I had to argue robbery under the guidelines version that was less favorable to the government. If the old guidelines were better for the defense than under the ex post facto rule, I was stuck with that. If the new guidelines were favorable to the defense, then under the one book rule or book in place at the time of sentencing, I was stuck with that. It wasn't a great position for the government to be in. Either way, the issue was whether or not Hobbs Act robbery qualified under the force clause under one of the two versions or under the enumerated robbery clause under one of the two versions. Either way, under the concessions that the Department of Justice has made at the time, I wasn't permitted at the time to rely on the residual clause. And it was a source of great frustration to me when Beckles was decided. And I'm thinking, oh, this is great. And then I noticed the date of sentencing and realized, oh, nuts, I'm stuck going to the new book. So I believed I was getting it right. I was unhappy not being able to rely on the residual clause during the briefing in this case. But that's what happened. If we were wrong, we were wrong. But it was.
You agree that setting aside all these procedural issues that Hobbs Act robbery is, doesn't satisfy?
Respectfully, no, Your Honor. The Hobbs Act robbery does satisfy the crime of violence definition.
You have to address the Hobbs Act provision that talks about conduct against property as opposed to persons. And it seems to me that the definition of robbery, the generic definition of robbery, you look at Fave or anybody else, it doesn't include against property. It has to be something against the person.
Let me talk about the enumerated robbery definition then. I'll leave aside the force clause issue then, because it strikes the government that the enumerated robbery definition is of more interest to the court. The government does believe that Hobbs Act robbery satisfies the definition of generic robbery as enumerated in the second clause of either the old commentary or the new text of the guideline.
You're talking about under the new guideline.
The government, under the new guideline, yes, but
then
it would
have been sentenced on.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
That he wasn't sentenced on. You're talking about the guideline he was not sentenced on.
Yes. Although even under the old guideline, robbery was enumerated then in the commentary, and the government believes that it was consistent with the text of the guideline at that time under the old residual clause. So
easiest way to deal with this is to send it back and let the district court resentence him under the correct guideline and assess these legal arguments that you all are raising there in the first instance, and then have it come up on a review. We're normally a court of review rather than first view. That's the way the process normally works, and everything would look better.
Your Honor, the government is perfectly happy with that resolution. If the court doesn't want to resolve this legal issue and remand the case, we can have a resentencing on the issue of whether or not an individual convicted of this crime.
It would have to be remanded. Do you have any argument that we don't have to remand it?
I could articulate an argument, Your Honor, but candidly, I'm not sure that I don't prefer a remand because it does allow fresh review.
If we're remanding it, then it's only scope of what we give the district judge to do.
Correct, Your Honor. The government has noted that it believes there's harmless error in this instance, which means that a remand is going to address an issue of whether or not an individual who commits an armed robbery at gunpoint forces someone into a basement should receive a sentence commensurate with the fact that he had five prior robbery convictions.
You've got a wonderful argument. Right. I have very sympathetic. I think Congress would be astounded to say somebody who came in with a gun and robbed somebody didn't create a crime of violence. But under the categorical approach, we look at the elements and the fact of conviction. And if the elements go beyond the categorical robbery or whatever standard of robbery, doesn't fulfill that. That's the issue on the merits that Mr. Patel would like us to address here before remand.
I'm prepared to address them as well, Your Honor, but candidly,
that would be given an advisory opinion.
Perhaps, Your Honor,
from the Court of Appeals.
To be clear, though, the government does believe that the generic robbery elements are going to be satisfied by Hobbs Act robbery.
You think that the property aspect is a crime of violence?
The property aspect of Hobbs Act robbery is a bigger problem for the government in the force clause analysis, Your Honor. I'll stick with enumerated robbery. This is the government's belief. First of all, setting aside the fact that we're dealing with a phrase, robbery, that is undefined in the sentencing guidelines.
We use common law, don't we?
We do. Yeah. And there is a consensus of case law pre-Johnson. It is older case law. And as Mr. Patel points out, it's case law that hasn't delved into a lot of analysis, in which courts have found, perhaps assumed, that Hobbs Act robbery is absolutely satisfies the common law version of robbery. So we start with the premise
because he used the title robbery, and if you look, for instance, under 2211, federal statute, does define robbery in the traditional sense. It does not include property. It's only against the person.
Correct, Your Honor.
And Lefebvre, who describes the common law, uses just against the person.
Yes.
And You want us, in other words, the difference between larceny and robbery usually is some kind of force against the person in connection with the taking of the property.
The government would argue that it's the use of force, but there's lots of robbery authorities, including the Model Penal Code.
Yeah, but how do you distinguish all these state cases where, like purse snatching, which where they just grab the purse, they don't touch the person, basically, is held to be larceny, But if they push and struggle with the person, then it becomes robbery.
Yeah, Your Honors, in first of all, with all due respect, I would argue many people who have been the victim of a purse snatching, the taking of a purse off the purse off their persons, probably do believe they were the victim of a robbery. To actually be physically invaded that way, to have something physically taken from someone, I think a lot of people in that position would believe.
Yeah, but that's not consistent with all the jurisprudence that Lefebvre talks about and makes the distinction. In other words, there's a difference between larceny mm-hmm. off the person and robbery, where you put the person in threat of harm or you actually use force against the person. For instance, a person sitting on the bench and has his purse or her purse on the table next to her,
yes, sir.
Somebody snatches it, that's larceny, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Even though it's in the presence of the person, which is in that definition.
Correct, Your Honor.
Well, but Hobbs Act robbery includes that. Because it takes the property in the presence of the person.
I have a difficult time proving as a prosecutor the use of force in that scenario. I think that's the issue where we might have a separation between a Hobbs Act robbery and a mere taking of property.
I don't think it's a question of force. I think it's a question of whether the threat's against the person or against the property. But anyway, this became a little more complex than even the briefing suggested. And you guys have mea culpa, I guess, enough. Anything further?
No, I'm absolutely happy to sit down, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Hammond. Mr. Patel, you anything further?
Just wanted to say, Your Honors, I think Judge Niemeyer, you get it. This is a situation where the law is very clear, really clear, that Hobbs Act robbery, just based on the statutory language, does not satisfy the force clause. And it's very clear.
It's curious to me that, 2111 describes robbery, a federal robbery,
mm-hmm.
and it does not use the property
right.
clause. And Hobbs Act robbery describes robbery, and it does.
Yeah, Your Honor, I think that Hobbs Act robbery was modeled after the New York Penal Code, which used person or property, and that's where we. But it's so much broader than any of the other robbery statutes. So, because we have such a clear situation here, Your Honor, it is plain error because it doesn't qualify under the force clause. It doesn't qualify under the enumerated offenses clause. And just
Did
one thing.
Brief plain error.
We did not brief plain error because of the crazy situation here, Your Honor. So we believe it's de novo, but this court definitely has the discretion to decide it under plain error. And if it is very clear,
if they decide it, though, wouldn't they just be given an advisory opinion on the matter?
No, Your Honor, because I think you will be deciding the issue that is, and then it will be remanded for a resentencing. And it's not only going to be beneficial to my client. This is
error,
a huge...
The plain error you're talking about, is that there was the wrong guideline. That's all the error is he was sentenced under the old guideline, he should have been sentenced under the new. That's the error.
But this is a recurring issue, Your Honor. So
it'll
I think
be,
you have the discretion. We would
decided.
Ask that this court...
It'll be decided in due course. It'll be resolved.
I know, but the...
course is, it's decided first.
Right.
Do you get additional bonus payments for taking additional appeals?
Because this case is coming right back up here, Your Honors. If we win, we're going to... government will likely appeal. This is a big issue.
The judge who's faced with all these issues, it's a fairly discretionary function. And if he gets the law right, he may vary, too, up or down. There's a lot of possibilities, whether you come up or not. He may get the law exactly right, and now you're in the realm of discretion.
You decide not to, yeah.
Well,
Your
Honor, but it's going to become – this is a very big issue. There are lots of Hobbs Act robbery cases and lots of cases in which people are potentially career offender based on Hobbs Act robbery. So this is a unique situation where we really urge the court to decide it. It is going to come back here, Pierre, hopefully back to the same panel.
You want to turn it into a declaratory judgment proceeding?
No, Your Honor.
Give you an advisory opinion right off the bat.
I agree that in the normal course, if a district court hasn't decided an issue below that it should be remanded back for the district
Your
court
argument
inside.
Is black and white.
But that this is because it's so black and white, so clear, and it's a recurring issue, and eventually it's going to come back up here. So for judicial efficiency purposes,
we
have briefed this issue.
You wouldn't want us to decide it now.
Pardon me?
If we ruled in favor of the government on their position of it, you wouldn't like the fact that we decided it now.
No, Yair, but this is no, of course not. But this is a purely legal issue, and I think that you know, from what the court's indicated, it's clear error.
All right,
so.
Let us consider all these factors.
Okay,
we'll come down and recount.
Great, thank you.